This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
Ah, and the time has come. And what time, you may all be asking? That time to bring in the good old classics. Yes, for our book club, we are finally coming to one of my all-time favorites, Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. And it's a truth universally acknowledged that our now famous and respected writer, Jane Austen, really was a woman beyond her time. So let's come together and discuss one of her more popular novels, Pride and Prejudice, which actually had a different title, but then they changed it about and they were like, oh, okay, no, we need to make it this title, which is what we know it as. It's just Pride and Prejudice. Apparently there was like several other books that had been, I think, named that or something along those lines. And so there was a lot of confusion and she went back and forth. Anyway, it is now what it is. And sounded like she did not make much money off of it, y'all. It's a really sad life. She had a really kind of sad life. It emulated a lot of through her books. Like you'll see things being told, like the whole entailment when there's not a son born, that the next male heir or like relation will take over it. And like there was a bit where one brother, there's a book, and I forgot which one because I read it. It's been a long time, takes ownership. And he, in the will, they're like, can you please take care of the mother and the daughters? And he does not. He like just pretty much just cast them out. It was really sad and gross.
Yeah.
And it's kind of reminiscent to her life. Like it's not great. She wasn't given the due, even though she had success pretty early on. She just didn't make money off of it, which is all sad.
Yes. And we have talked about that before. I feel like it's come up in several episodes.
Yes.
I think it even came up in our episode on women writing romance briefly. It came up. This was inspired by the fact that I had read that after we read last month's book club pick, Pride, which was a remix of Pride and Prejudice. It came out I had never read.
Right.
This one, I feel like we kind of talked about it in there, and we talked about it in some other. Because I feel like I know like the vague details of this because you've told me.
Right.
But I don't know all the specifics.
Right. And I think I'm getting confused because we did have an expert who did tours, if you remember,
yes,
that episode in England, which I still want to go on. I was like, oh my God,
I want to go to here.
Yes. Because I think I'm wrong in some things, because she did have brothers. They just ended up being like not from a wealthy family, all these things, but like her father was a scholar, all these different things. And the book was initially called First Impressions, which is, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like when you think about all of that,
yeah,
but then the Pride and Prejudice came instead. So So many different things. We did have that episode. We probably need to bring it back as a classic so I can be corrected in what I just said about Jane Austen. But she did not live a rich life. And she was supposed to marry someone rich, and then that didn't happen and all these things. So she wanted to marry for love and really, really like wrote about the possibility of being able to do so. But she didn't. Anyway. Before we jump into the actual plot, Annie, What are your thoughts now that I have forced you into actually reading the original classic? Because I've made you watch Bridget Jones' Diary, which is a retelling of that, as well as we read the book Pride. So, what were your thoughts?
It was really interesting to come from that perspective. And I actually think it was sort of helpful because we've also read Persuasions by Jane Austen. And I really I enjoyed that too, but I got confused because of the way they would refer to people. Mm-hmm. So like Miss whoever. Or,
right.
And there's just a certain part of my modern brain that's like, that's your cousin though. So I would just get confused. So I think it actually helped me to have read Pride first. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I see why it's been such a lasting classic. It's got so many great lines. It's very witty. That's what I told you. And I know people have said that before, but it's very witty. Like, Elizabeth has just got all these comebacks and they're so well thought out and fun. They're fun to read. I enjoyed all of the, like, relationships between, like, Elizabeth and her father. And then you got the mother who's, like, worrying all the time. And I also thought it was interesting because when you're looking at the more modern take that Pride did, their cell phones. So things happen much quicker.
Right.
So the whole thing with Lydia, I was like, wow, this is
completely different.
Yeah, this is like much more stressful because we don't know where she is. We're just going by horse carriage to try to find her.
That's my favorite part. It's like the overnight express and all these things.
Yes.
But yeah, it is. And then also, that's why I was like originally telling you, I was like, I'm not sure how they're going to do the Lydia, the youngest child, but because in this cake, she's 15, runs away with a 20-something-year-old who obviously they're like infragante, as I say, and her reputation is to be shot. And I'm like, are they going to have, because it's supposed to be one of the things, like age difference is one of those things as well, like all these things. And I'm like, how are they going to do this? And she did a wonderful job in what, like, yes, what would be the scandals today that wasn't going to put someone in jail.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it was still tense in Pride. It was just like resolved much more quickly.
Right. She did a great job on that.
Yes.
But yeah. So what would you rate it on the scale of books?
On the scale of books?
That you've read? 1 through 10.
I mean, I don't know how to put it on a scale, Samantha, but I did really enjoy it. And it's funny because all my friends growing up loved it. And I just, it was never like, oh, I won't read that. I just wasn't into romance, so I just never did. But I did really enjoy it. And like I said, I was like, oh yeah, I can see, you told me you read it in like one night. I was like, oh yeah, I can, because you just like, oh, I want to see what happens next. It was a really enjoyable book. And I think it's pretty impressive that for, you know, me coming into it in the year 2024, that I was still like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
This is hitting. Yeah, yeah. Like, it was really enjoyable. And it didn't feel like, there were certainly some things where I was like, oh, that must be a thing at the time. But mostly I was like, yeah, this is still, people are kind of like this.
Right. And you know what? I have to come back at the end and say, as annoying as the mother character is, she's not wrong in something. And like, I was like, yeah, I get it. But yeah, let's jump into it. And we're going to start with the characters because I feel like that needs to be the breakdown first. Or you're probably, if you have not read it and you do like to read, this is something that you should pick up if you haven't already. I'm going to be surprised if you haven't. But for those of you who may be like naysayers because you don't understand the level of newness and freshness for this book during this time and what she was saying about society, Austin in itself, again, going against the idea, like she understood the rules and followed them. However, she really felt like they were ridiculous, as we all do, I think. And I think we're learning that more and more. And then just the unfairness of it all as well. But she also is like, she's a girl's girl, but not a girl's girl here. I will say she has, like, Elizabeth, the main character. So there's a lot to be said about this. Fun fact, Audible has it, and Rosamund Pike is the one who reads it. So who plays Jane in the newer adaptation with Keira Knightley, that I hate, of Pride and Prejudice. Just so we had that. And she does great with the voices. It really threw me off, though. I was like, she has a very shrill voice for the mother. Mm-hmm. Threw me off. And I think it's also a bit of like higher speeds, so it's even shriller.
Right.
In which she's voicing. Beautiful job. Because I do love Rosamund Pike. She does a great job in it. So if you want entertaining to listen and you needed a break from our podcast, which I hope you don't take a break. But if you need, you know, something in between, you mm-hmm. should listen to that. Mm-hmm.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. So we have the Bennets and relations and friends that you should know about, which the main character is Elizabeth, who's the second oldest daughter in the Bennet family. You're going to hear most of it from her point of view, or see it most of it from her point of view, and narrators, obviously. We have Jane, who is the oldest and fairest and kindest of them all, kind-mannered, best disposition, according to all of the narrations. Mary, the middle and the plainest sister, really cruel, but she's also very serious and scholarly and a little too stoic, to the point that she misreads the room a lot. Then we have Catherine Kitty, who is the fourth daughter, she doesn't get as much play because she's not seen as much, but she's one of the sillier, as her father would put it, girls of the family. Then you have Lydia, who is the youngest and most spoiled and very loud, and Kitty lives under her shadow, essentially. Then we have Mr. Bennett, who is the father, who is very sarcastic, very stoic, obviously does not care much for his wife in personality, but loves his family, but his favorite probably would go with Jane and Elizabeth because they have the most sense, as he would say. Then we have Mrs. Bennett, who is the mother, very materialistic, very like disingenuous, judgmental, a little bit of a hypochondriac, and loves to tell people how she suffers. Then we have Charlotte Lucas, who is Elizabeth's friend and their neighbor, essentially, best friend. Mr. Collins, who is the cousin of the family and is the male relation that will be owning Longbourn after the father passes away because he's the next male relative. Then we have the Gardners, Mr. Gardner is the brother to Miss Bennett, Mrs. Bennett, the wife, and his wife who comes into play, Mrs. Gardner. So we have Mr. and Mrs. Gardner. Then we have Darcy and friends. We have Fitzwilliam Darcy, who is the main love interest male character, proud, wealthy owner of Pemberley. We have Charles Bingley, who is a handsome, amiable, wealthy friend who takes over Netherfield Park, which is in that area, Meryton area as well. We have Caroline Bingley, who is the sister to Bingley, who is also very judgmental in high society. Louisa Hurst, who is also the sister to Bingley, and her husband, Mr. Hurst, who comes into play. We have our Colonel Fitzwilliams, who is Darcy's cousin that comes just for a slight scene, but fairly important. We have Lady Catherine de Bourgh, who is the aunt to Darcy, also very important, and the benefactress, I guess, to Collins, Mr. Collins, who has a daughter named Anne. Just, you know, she's not really big, but just, you know. And then we have Georgina Darcy, who is the younger sister of Darcy. There you go.
Got it.
You're welcome. Uh-huh. So here is a rundown. I thought it was going to be quick, but it is not because I am me and I love the story. Here we go. And go ahead and put this as a kind of like a warning, I guess. I have watched the BBC series way too many times to count. Like, I own the DVDs. I have found them on Disney. Thank you very much. And I have repeatedly watched them. Did I just recently watch them as I was also listening to the book? Yes, I did. So, some of these things overlap and how it happens, because there's obviously interpretations when it comes to the filming. Still the best adaptation to me, of course. It's like 18, 20 hours long, and that's why. However, so if I get some of these things mixed up, because it was different on the show, please forgive me. But it kind of runs in that same line. And Annie, you ready? We're going to go through this. I swear to God, fast.
Not right.
So we have the announcement with the infamous starting line. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. Obviously. And it begins with an announcement that Netherfield has been let at last by a very eligible bachelor, which Miss Bennett has set her sights on for her dear daughters. After some teasing and back and forth with her husband, Mr. Bennett finally admits to having actually made introductions with a new gentleman of the neighborhood, Mr. Bingley. So you have to do that first, or it'd be improper. The women could not talk to him. Remember, society. Mm-hmm. After an encounter at a neighborhood ball, Bingley falls head over heels for the lovely Jane, which comes to no surprise. We also meet the sisters Caroline and Louisa, along with Bingley's best friend, Mr. Darcy, who was disliked from the moment he opens his mouth. Rude and too proud, many say about him, even to the point that he refuses to dance at the ball, even with the lovely Elizabeth, who finds it all a joke and easily brushes the sighs and says, I wouldn't even think about dancing with him. He's fine. I don't need him. And as for Mr. Bingley and Jane, they seem to hit it off. Even the sisters, Bingley sisters, are inclined to like her, even with the fact that she has unfortunate connections, as in not high society. Later, Jane is invited to Netherfield while the men are away to visit with the sisters. Mrs. Bennett plots and sends Jane off on horseback instead of a carriage, as it looks like rain, and she may have to stay at Netherfield for a bit longer than expected. Jane ends up getting a cold, because yes, it does rain, and having to remain there for a while. And after the weather has cleared, Elizabeth goes to visit and take care of her sister at Netherfield, because she can't leave her alone, obviously. And of course, this leads to her having to interact with the Bingleys and Darcy, where we find them having a rousing discussion of faults like pride and vanity. Yes, and here's a quote. Yes, vanity is a weakness indeed, because she accuses him of that. But pride, where there's this real superiority of mind, pride will be always under good regulation. So he's like, pride's not a fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's just earned. After an embarrassing visit from the mother at Netherfield, and once Jane is finally recovered, they go home. But we find out that Darcy is in danger of falling for Elizabeth and her wit and her charms at this time. Ruh-ro. Soon, we have a very entertaining visit from the Bennet's cousin, Mr. Collins, who has traveled there not only to reconcile from past indifferences, or past differences, but also possibly bridge a tie between them and the Bennets. Yes. Collins, being the next male in the family line, will be inheriting Longbourn and has plans of trying to marry one of his cousins with the blessings of his patronage, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, who is rich and somewhat eccentric and very narcissistic, but hey. After finding out that Jane was unavailable, he decides on Elizabeth as his choice, obviously. All the while, the militia has moved into Meryton to the excitement of Lydia and Kitty and so many others. Soon, we meet Wickham, a handsome and very light man of the militia. And of course, we find out that Wickham and Darcy have an unfavorable connection. Wickham just says pretty much that Darcy lies, takes away his money, takes away his home, and does not like him because Darcy's father preferred Wickham over himself. Ruh-ro, that's a wretched thing and very, very unforgivable according to all of society and Elizabeth. And soon, Wickham shows his affections towards Elizabeth, who doesn't mind it at all because he's quite nice and quite nice looking. Later, the Gardeners, the aunt and uncle, join, and they are really good influences to the young ladies and someone Elizabeth sees as people of good respect and opinions. Mrs. Gardiner, however, advises Elizabeth to be wary of Wickham and to remember her own status and needs for a good marriage. You know, you have to have a good marriage or you're going to be sad. Soon, we have a much-awaited gathering at Netherfield with all the people, including the militia. Unfortunately, Wickham was not able to make it due to other matters, to Elizabeth's disappointment. But Mr. Collins, who is still there, takes up her first two dances and is very embarrassing and very clumsy about it all. He just can't get it. Mr. Darcy, however, also asks for a dance, which Elizabeth agrees to after being too stunned to reject him. And she tries to make conversation. Does not go well. After some embarrassing interactions by her family, Elizabeth and family go back home where the mother was so excited about all these interactions and the possibility of these good connections. Soon we have a proposal of marriage for Elizabeth from Mr. Collins, who is rejected and dejected and flees to the Lucas's home for a reprieve because, you know, embarrassment. And soon find out that Bingleys and Darcys have left to go back into town. Oh no, as in London, like away from Netherfield because town. And also, by the way, this is how I refer to town when I was growing up in North Georgia, because it was far away from my house. So I would go into town.
Right. Yeah.
People make fun of me for that. Still do. Anyway. And at this point, we also find that Charlotte is engaged to Mr. Collins to Mrs. Bennet's displeasure because she wanted Elizabeth to marry him, as well as the fact that her home was going to be taken over by the Lucases. How dare they? Mm-hmm. And she's very mad at Elizabeth. Very mad. And all the while, Wickham turns his attentions to a different woman away from Elizabeth, who has a lot of money. And Elizabeth accepts that he has to marry for money as well. So, you know, understandable. Jane, in her heartbreak, goes off with her aunt and uncle Gardeners, where she finds out that the Bingley sisters seem to not want anything to do with her, and that Bingley may soon be married to Darcy's sister, Georgiana. Elizabeth embarks on a journey as well to visit Charlotte at her new home with Mr. Collins. And so many things happen, including getting to meet the famous Lady Catherine de Bourgh, running into Mr. Darcy and his cousin, Colonel Fitzwilliam, who also takes a liking to Miss Bennet as well, but also doesn't have any money. So there's that. Soon, she finds out some very important information. Darcy was intended to marry DeBerg's daughter, Anne. But Darcy wants to marry Elizabeth and proposes in a very insulting manner, saying that he wished he didn't like her, essentially, because she was so far beneath him. So nice of him. Mr. Darcy and Bingley's sister purposely drove Bingley away from Jane and misled both of them. And Wickham had lied about his entire situation and that actually Wickham had tried to take Godden money instead of the building that he wanted, because all he wanted was money. And then tried, after he ran out of money and felt duped, he tried to run away with Darcy's younger sister and make this a really bad situation in which Darcy discovered them and quickly ran Wickham out of town. So all of that, remember that. These are all the things that she's discovered. She was very, very, very upset when we were returning home, and so many secrets that she had to hide, including from her sister, that yes, there was trickery into the demise of their relationship. So, decides to finally go on vacation with her aunt and uncle Gardner. They all proceed to tour Derbyshire, including the beautiful land of Pemberley, which is owned by the Darcys, thinking that the owners were not home. But uh-oh, Darcy arrives unexpectedly, is more and is quite polite and very, very welcoming to her and her family. And throughout that time she's there, they interact more, making Elizabeth slowly change her mind about Darcy. Soon she meets his sister, Georgiana, who she likes immediately. And then she also sees her old acquaintances, the Bingleys, including the sisters, unfortunately. And as everything seems to be going so well, Elizabeth soon finds out that, oh no, her youngest sister has run away with Wickham. Uh-oh. And she returns home quickly, but not before telling Mr. Darcy all of these bad news. And she knows and he knows what this is about. And after returning home, she finds the home in a terrible state and her father out searching for his daughter along with her uncle Gardner. However, after many days of waiting, good news comes and we find out that Lydia and Wickham have married. So making it all right, correcting this situation. Later, we find out that Darcy was the main reason for this and that he has financially backed the entire marriage. Soon, we have entertaining interactions between Lady Catherine, who comes to forbid Lizzie from even thinking about marrying her Darcy, because she's, you know, he's intended for her daughter, Anne. After all that, nothing comes about of it. Later, we have a happy ending that we've been waiting for as Bingley returns and proposes to Jane and tells her the truth of why he didn't see her and all the things that had mistakenly happened. And that is soon followed by Darcy proposing again to Elizabeth, and this time having a different reaction as well as the different approach. And of course, this shocks both her father and mother. They're like, what? And soon they are married and live happily ever after, with her father visiting Elizabeth and Darcy often to get away from his family, and Elizabeth teaching Georgiana to be a little shocking as she continues to tease Darcy throughout the rest of their marriage and life together. The end.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I love that ending. So in the BBC series, they don't have that ending. They just have them, you know, driving away after their wedding, so happy, and finally kiss, because they don't kiss. Like, this is kind of like a Korean drama. Like, they don't kiss until they finally, of course, to be fair, it is like supposed to be based in that time. They don't do that, oh dear. But in the book, you see a scene where she's teasing Darcy still, and the sister is just like blushing and shocked, but at the same time, like, aw, loving the fact that she stands up for herself, essentially. And I love that scene. I was like, that's such a great idea. And then also we find out that Lydia and Wickham are not happy people, but they're maintaining and often asking for money from them.
Yeah.
But we also don't see in the show where the gardeners are so well respected. You get an inkling of it. But in the book, they really talk about how, like, Darcy really likes them and realizes how upstanding these people are and all these things. And I really liked that portion of the book. And I was like, I wish there was a better way to interpret how good people they are, because you don't really see that throughout. But yeah, so that is the entirety of the book. To go and watch a good adaptation, go watch the BBC version, y'all.
I was like, we should just do that as our movie for this month. And you were like, no.
It's too redundant.
You were right. But
it's too redundant. It's literally the same thing. But like, you should definitely watch it. Of course, there's several themes throughout. One of the biggest ones is class. I think the constant back and forth about status in class, whether it's about the Bennets and their entailment. So we know, if we find out that level of, like, they're kind of lower on the ranking because they don't have a son. And so as soon as the father dies, they're screwed, essentially. And then we have the whole conversation a bit again about the gardeners being shopkeepers or lawyers, that's not well received. And as part of society, even how Mr. Lucas, Colonel, I believe, who is a gentleman and in part of society, is still looked down on because he was not originally knighted. And so he was knighted after the fact, and they still look down on him about that. You see that conversation with the Bingleys, the sisters being very to-do about this and how they really did look down on the people of the countryside, essentially of the Meryton countryside, and they were not impressed. Neither was Darcy. And he was an a- And about that entailment, the mother was really upset and could not understand why this could stand. Of course, her harping at her husband, who had nothing, he could do nothing about it, wasn't helpful. But she's right. Who? Why? Why can't they stand up against this? This is just absolutely unfair. She is correct.
She is correct. And that was one of the interesting things, which I think is going to go really well with the next theme we're going to talk about. But it was interesting to read from that time how important it was, you know, to get to marry off your daughters to someone well off, hopefully, or, you know, the threat of, like, losing your property. But it was also kind of funny, like, with Collins, he's like, I'll ask her. She said no. All right, I'll try again later. Okay, no. Right. Okay, I'll try you. What do you say? Like, it was kind of that very economic part of marriage, what marriage used to be, that we were seeing a lot
right.
in this.
Right. And then there was a quote in there that we didn't talk about because the scene between Lady Catherine de Bourgh and Elizabeth, when Lady Catherine comes and like tells her she forbids her, is a masterclass of like being able to stand up for yourself and coming back. But at one point, like Catherine de Bourgh does say, will the shades of Pemberley be thus polluted by not only Elizabeth's stance in life, but also that what has just happened between Lydia and Wickham? Because even though everything kind of had been fixed, there's still a bit of notoriety of what happened there. And the people who knew about it knew, like, this was not to be had. And this is definitely a no-no. So with that level of, like, that level of class, like, these are the people that you're with. These are the people that you're associated with. Which is a big conversation that happens.
That was one of the reasons that it was so, Elizabeth was so upset when she heard it. It was not only like, oh, I know Wickham, and now my sister's been drawn up into this. It was like, my family is going to be associated with this. And that's part of the reason why Darcy, despite hating Wickham, went and tried to fix it, which in this case was like, okay, you actually are going to have to get married.
Right.
But that was another instance of, like the class of it all being, this is going to really bring us even lower, in quotes.
Right. Like we were going to be untouchable. Unless,
exactly.
Essentially. And then, of course, another conversation with class is wealth. Wealth was very, very important. And they would compare who had the most, essentially, talking about a king. I think that's the girl that Wickham goes after he leaves Elizabeth, because she had inherited £10,000, and that made her very eligible. And so, like, there's a line I think they say about, like, oh yeah, that is a attribute indeed. Like, essentially, like, that is a yes. They talk about the comparison to the fact that yes, Bingley has wealth, but Darcy has more wealth. Like, they have a whole comparison of what that looks like. And honestly, because Darcy and Bingley had so much wealth, they could marry, quote unquote, someone who was less wealthy and less in standing in society, the Bennets, even though they were great.
Yeah. It was interesting to see that the relationship between Jane and Bingley, because they sort of just hit it off pretty immediately. And the mom was so happy about it. Mrs. Bennet was so happy about it. She was like, yes, this is going to work. But then you have, like, on Bingley's side, its sisters being like, No. Even though they seemed like such a good match.
They initially liked Jane a lot, but they immediately said, unfortunately, her connections, they're something to look at. And they all were like, no, even though they liked Jane as a person. And they were like, so that comes to our second theme, which is marriage. Women must marry well or they are all doomed. So at least one of them, as Elizabeth and Jane speak to each other, have to marry for money, because that understanding is that they will take care of the rest of the children and the mother when the father passes away, with the assumption that the mother was going to outlive the father, which Mr. Bennet does say, I might outlive you. We can just take that into consideration. Which is, which apparently was a thing. Like, there was a lot of, like, who's going to take care of us? Someone has to get married well, and you need to take care of us. Which, again, that didn't always happen, I don't think.
No.
But I think they were given money, right, to the family? Like, they were kind of given, the dowry was from the woman, though.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, women couldn't own property.
Yeah.
But I think if, like, the man, they got married to a wealthy man, then it's almost as if she gets to keep the place. It's sort of like a, I don't know, consolatory prize.
Right.
But it's not, I mean, it was really, you were just counting on the guy to actually give you any money a lot of the time.
And then we have, with that, alliances, the word fortunate alliance has been made, or the phrase has been made, was floated about. We see that with Lucas's talking about Charlotte getting married to Mr. Collins, who is under the patronage of Lady Catherine de Bourgh, and finding like, okay, you have made a good choice here, because these alliances allow us better reputation and better society, I guess. Role of women and being out. We have that whole conversation, and the fact that there was a conversation in which the fact that Jane and Elizabeth were not married, but the younger sisters were out before they were married, and how that was kind of scandalous.
Yeah. And I thought that was interesting too, because Lydia has this whole thing where she's like, what if I get married first?
Right.
Like, she was very motivated, which the society she was raised in, it makes sense, but she was very motivated to be like, I could be the first one that gets married. It was like a power.
Yeah, she has more desire, like they desire her more. And so therefore, she takes that trump.
Yes.
And married women outstrip single women in general.
Right. And so she was like, really, I'm going to do it first. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why she went and made this pretty reckless decision at a very young age.
Right. And I'm assuming, like, this is assuming because it's not a part of the book at all. The reason she came out in society so quickly is because she was a brat and wanted to be a part of, like, balls and such, and made her parents let them all come out. Like, since she has the youngest, all of them had to. That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah. And it would also make sense that at a certain point, one, it's just easier. If you've got four daughters, just let them all go. But also, if you are, we need to find somebody, a man, somebody's got to get married.
One of y'all.
We'll put them all out there on the field and see if one of y'all can do it.
Somebody, anybody.
Yeah.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And then that comes to that whole competition and trying to get married quickly. The idea of happiness in marriage, or marriage and like a marriage of love and money. And there's several quotes here. So here's one. It says from Lizzie talking, "I'm determined that only the deepest love will induce me into matrimony. So I shall end an old maid and teach your 10 children to embroider cushions and play their instruments very ill." So the fact that she would not marry for money, that she would rather be in love, and there's no way that she would actually get married. And the idea, and I think that may mimic Jane Austen's real sense of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That she would rather not than doing a loveless marriage, which is understandable.
Yeah. I don't know much about this, as much about you for sure, but like it does feel, even for people now, even for me, like I feel for women, marriage can be kind of a trap. I'm not saying it always is, and I'm not saying it can't be very healthy, but it does sometimes feel like you get married and then you have to clean the house and you have to do all, like all these things mm-hmm. come with marriage for women that don't necessarily come with men.
Right.
And so to me, especially at this time when it was, you know, women couldn't really own property in most cases and there was all these expectations and all of that, I can see why Jane Austen would have been like, this just seems like right. I can't do what I want.
Right.
I can't like write the things I want or just be who I am if I get married just for this right. economic thing.
And, you know, Austen doesn't even look at the dark side. Like she just looks at like this, like, boring and being stuck in a loveless marriage side. Like, of course, it entails everything else, but she doesn't look at like the depth of like control and darkness and things that were happening during that time. And still, actually, that like, oh yeah, this is people suffering in these situations and domestic violence situations. So she didn't even talk about that, honestly, in which Jane kind of references do anything rather than marry without affection. And then they imply the mother and the father that they see have married without affection, and neither one of them want that. Neither one of them want a marriage where one is condescending and the other one is always complaining. So there's this level of like back and forth of like, yeah, they're the prime examples, and I think we've all been there, of what not to have in marriages or what they don't want to have in marriages. And this was that moment of like seeing all of that. And even the mother talks about the fact at one point, like the fact that Jane and Bingley will be so giving that they're going to run out of money and they'll be unhappy, and in which, you know, or not that run out of money, that they'll be so kind that they'll run out of their goodwill and kindness and their heart and their love. And the mom's like, they have plenty of money. They'll be happy forever. Like that was the implication, which is not, again, that's not the level of marriage that Jane or Elizabeth want in this way. And then we do have one character, Charlotte Lucas, who talk about the fact that she did not have the option to have a choice. Either she was going to be destitute and alone, or she's going to have to settle. So this line is in talking about trying to seduce a man. This is trying to make sure Elizabeth understands that Jane needs to show how much she could be in love. And this says there are very few who have heart enough to be really in love without encouragement in that level, because Jane was being too cautious, according to Charlotte. And also, yeah, Charlotte is the prime like example of choosing marriage for contentment and choosing what she can, because she's described as being also a bit plain. I think she's older, like mid-20s.
Oh, no.
Right. But that's apparently real too old, like yeah. spinster level
oh, no.
of aging. And so she had to choose Mr. Collins. And the fact that, like, yes, he's a ridiculous dude who is sexist, misogynist, and just, like, dumb. He's not smart. His speech is so good. She writes so well. It's so funny that she knows what she's getting into, but she knows that this is the best option she has in order to live a more fulfilled, quote-unquote, life where she can be taken care of. And that's what she says.
I thought that was interesting because Charlotte and Elizabeth were close friends. And then when Charlotte, after Mr. Collins had proposed to Elizabeth and said, Well, you say no now, but I'll come back.
Back and forth.
Oh my goodness. That was really interesting to me because it was so reminiscent of things I've had where guys are like,
I can change your mind.
I'll come back later. I could change your mind. It's like, oh my gosh, it was happening all
along. You're
playing
games with me. You're just teasing me to make me want you more.
The no means yes, yes, right?
Yes.
But anyway, he does eventually he's like, okay, Elizabeth, no. But he goes to Charlotte and Charlotte says yes. And Elizabeth's really concerned that she's kind of let down that Charlotte said yes. And she's concerned about how their relationship will be moving forward. And Charlotte's kind of like, please don't cut me out of your life. And Elizabeth does go visit Charlotte and Lucas's. But it was interesting to read I thought there are different takes on Charlotte being like, you know what, I have to do this. And Elizabeth being so, I'm only going to marry to marry for love. But also, we've talked about this before. You have friends and they get married and they move away and you're kind of like, okay, that relationship changes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and Charlotte knows this is about to change her relationship with Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. There's several things here that is happening, though, because Elizabeth had put Charlotte on her level, and she thought they were on the same page essentially, and Charlotte wasn't married because she wouldn't settle was the idea. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, from Charlotte's standpoint, she's never gotten given the opportunity to say yes. And for Charlotte, she doesn't care. She's not a romantic. She's like, I don't have these ideals like you. Don't need all of that. I just need to know that I'm going to be taken care of and that I'm going to be okay and that he's not going to mistreat me, as in like abuse me, which was that conversation that happens. And then James being like, you need to be more understanding. This is not the same place. And that's kind of where that level of like her prejudice, because if we have the characters, Elizabeth has prejudice and Darcy has the pride. And that's the level of conversation we have in this. And so that actually really does show Elizabeth's prejudice towards this ideal of marriage and the fact that she judges Charlotte so harshly to that kind of like, I can't talk to her. I can't see her. She's changed for me. And I think we've all been there where people were like, why are you dating that person? What reason? Yeah. Like, you know, and that's going to be like, and I'm not coming around now that you're with that person. We've definitely seen those things happen in that conversation in kind of like modern age. But the level of desperation that Charlotte felt is understandable during that time. And so I felt like, even though I love the character of Elizabeth, and I think Jane Austen did it on purpose in that making her show that this is a fault. This is a giant fault that Elizabeth has, where her prejudice and judgment is a little too much.
Yeah. I definitely thought it was the interaction when Lydia came back too. Like, Elizabeth was rightfully angry, don't get me wrong, but I thought it was really fascinating how she was like, I have nothing to say to you.
Right.
You can be gone.
Right. Forever.
Yes.
Both of you.
Yes, because I feel like some of us we've experienced that where you're just like, you've caused me so much drama and pain.
And in her mind, she's cost her a huge relationship too.
Yeah.
Like at this point, she's thinking that Darcy is judging her and doesn't want anything to do with her or her family because of what has happened, when in actuality, like, there's different things happening. But she definitely does. And don't get me wrong, she's mad at Lydia for her selfishness, which she knew was coming. She knew that Lydia was selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the next thing was prejudice as well, that, you know, I said, let's talk about first impressions, the name of the book, original book, and how everyone disliked Darcy. Everybody judged Darcy because Darcy was rude. He was. But loved Wickham because Wickham was entertaining. And then it turns out the opposite. Like, one person has the good intentions and goodness, and the other one only pretends to be good. Mm-hmm. We have that level into that point that Elizabeth, it takes so much for Elizabeth to change her mind. It takes, like, giant stories. And she does not want to fact check anything. She just, how could you not believe this? Of course he's telling the truth. The story's too precise. Because she already had an idea about who Darcy was.
Right. And she wanted to prove it.
Right.
But it was the dichotomy of like Jane being so trusting.
Right. Over
and being
trusting.
So like, oh no, they would never convince Bingley's sister, convince him to go against them too much. But then you have Elizabeth who's like almost too cynical.
Right.
Like, oh, I knew it all along. He was a bad guy. It was really fun to see them interact and yes. have their conversations about where Jane's like, no, that can't be. And Elizabeth's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Elizabeth says that at one point, she's like, till I have your goodness, I'll never have your happiness. He's like, right. She understands how jaded she is. Mm-hmm. And of course, the pride bit, we know that it takes a long time because, yeah, Darcy's proposal, real bad. The first one was real bad, like insulting her in every way and then like, being shocked when she says no.
Yeah, he's so taken aback. Like, this could not be.
How dare you? I just like relented to finally liking you, even though everything about you is awful.
And he's given her, like, as the reader, you get insights into his feelings.
Right.
And as the reader, you kind of know where it's going. But he's really given her no reason to know where it's going.
Right. And, like, he's too honest. He is way too honest for this moment. Of course, he comes back around with the fact that Lady de Burgh comes back and tells him, oh, I'm going to tell him what Elizabeth did to me, being rude and standing up to me. And that's going to change his mind because he loves me so much. And he's like, oh, she does like me still. Let's go. Like, it's that level. But yes, that level of pride. And they finally kind of mesh together, come together in that wonderful union where everything is happily ever after. And everybody has money. Lots of money.
Yep.
The end.
Everybody has money. hey, she found the love and the money. That's
and
pretty
money.
Good.
Like, she finally found it, and good on her. Good on her.
Yes. Yes. We also didn't mention she's very good at playing the piano.
No, she's kind of good.
Well, to me, it felt like he was entranced with her piano skills.
Yes.
Which I find to be a common trope in many things.
So I think the way it's supposed to be is that she's okay, but he loves it so much.
Right.
And like, she's like, yeah, I'm okay. I mean, it's not great, but I can play. And then like, he's just like, she's the most amazing player.
And there's a whole scene where Mary is playing and she's doing terribly and doesn't get the message.
Oh, that whole, and they do it so well in the BBC where everything's like just compacted and you just feel the secondhand embarrassment because it's like echoed from Jane and Elizabeth's perspective. They're just like, how do we stop this train wreck? And they just can't. And it just kind of echoes in her head later on after he proposes and pretty much reminds her all these embarrassing things that he witnessed. She's like, it's perfect.
Yeah. So a lot of awkward, relatable scenes.
Yes. So like, these are the things that I love in this book. And to me, this is how like the BBC portrayed the characters, how I read them better than the new version, the condensed Keira Knightley version, because this whole like, I think both made sure to have Darcy in like a wet shirt or like at one point in time, because that's kind of the infamous thing. I will say, when you start the BBC series, it feels so over the top acting that it's a little cringe. You're like, oh, why did I think it was so much better? It gets better. They get better. But then they also have, like, I know the fantasy level, but like the way they portray the father and the mother characters really irritated me in the new one, because the father character is so, like, he looks like he's going to cry all the time. And he just looks so weak. And I'm like, that's not the character she built. Like, she wanted him pretty much disinterested and just annoyed. So that's why, like, those characters were really important to me. And I was like, they need to be better. This needs to be better. Those were the big things that I didn't like. I didn't like Keira Knightley's portrayal of Elizabeth. I did like the Jane character. Rosamund Pike did a great job with Jane.
Did the audible version.
Anyway, that's how I feel.
I love it. 18 hours, you say.
I don't know. I'm exaggerating. I don't know how many hours, but it's like several, at least 8 hours long, I think.
Okay.
You should watch it though.
I might.
Just put it on. Put it in the background while you're doing your fan fiction.
It would give me some inspiration for fan fiction.
And it'd be an ode to fan fiction and the origination of fan fiction.
Austinites.
Yeah.
Some of the first fan fiction writers that we know of.
Mm-hmm. And technically, I guess, like, they're not fan fiction, but the reimagining of it is kind of that level. And I love every single one of them, essentially, mm-hmm. except for the Keira Knightley one.
We briefly talked about doing the zombies one.
Yes, they were my dude, which, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. It is interesting that when zombies come in, the dude comes in. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in the future. There's a lot. This was I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, but it was a hugely influential work. Unfortunately, it seems Jane Austen didn't make a lot of money from it, but it made such a big impact, mm-hmm. and we're still seeing it and feeling it. People still love it. There are tours that we are trying to go on.
I really do want to go.
I was the whole time I was reading this, I was like,
I want to go to Bath. I want to yeah. go, like, Persuasions makes me want to go to Bath. I want to go to...
I did renew my passport yesterday.
Good.
I don't know when it will arrive, though, because there's a huge backlog. But
yeah.
when it comes, Samantha...
We're going?
Maybe. Maybe. At least I could go right now.
The possibility is there. All right. Yes. That's fair.
Yes. Well, listeners, I know a lot of you have fondness for this work, thoughts about it. If you would like to write in, if you have preferences on whatever adaptation is the best or the worst, you can...
Don't come at me about the Keira stuff.
You can let us know. Our email is stephaniamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok @StuffOneEverToldYou. We have a TeePublic store and we have a book you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.